Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, this is Deborah Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the third week of December. This week, we are very pleased to have Dr. Fred Weinman back as a guest on Nature Now. Fred is an expert botanist with his specialty wetland plants, and the local chapter of the Washington Native Plant Society was thrilled when he and his wife Anne, who's also an accomplished botanist, retired to Port Townsend a number of years ago so that we could pick their botanical brains a little easier. Welcome, Fred.
Thank you, Deborah. And, well, it's nice to be here talking again about my favorite subject.
Oh, it's very nice to have you here. In keeping with the season, this week's main topic is mistletoe and other parasitic plants. But before we get to that, let's first hear the mystery sound of the week. This week's a hard one, so I'll give you a hint. Look to the sea for this one. We'll play it again at the end of the program and tell you what it is.
The most important news of the week is the blessed return of our sun. As most of you know, the winter solstice, or the first day of winter, falls this year on the evening of December 21st. From this day forth, day length will be gradually increasing until the summer solstice, which occurs the third week of June. For those of you suffering from seasonal affective disorder, be comforted that the day length on December 22nd will be a full 5 seconds longer than on December 21st.
Woohoo!
I bet you're feeling better already. And it will get even better from then on out.
Other news in our skies includes the full moon, which will fall on Christmas Day for the first time since 1977. The next time that this is due to occur is 2034. So hopefully we'll get a peek at it so that you can enjoy the sight.
Also from the sky, but not nearly so far away, there has been some interesting birding news. David Gluckman was watching for a northern shrike to reappear at the Tarbu Creek Reserve when he saw a flock of 7 to 8 western bluebirds feeding in the grass. They are such a treat to see at any time of the year, but especially rare to see this late in the season since most of them have migrated south.
So we just had the Christmas bird count here in Port Townsend last Saturday on December 19th, and you were telling me, Fred, that you had seen and heard of some interesting things that were sighted, right?
We had been walking by Katai Lagoon, and on many days, and on Saturday, there were 100, up to about 100 common goldeneye there. You look out and see all this white out there, and it just doesn't look right until you look through the binoculars and see that these are all common goldeneyes.
Wow.
I was talking with David Ruge. He mentioned that at Oak Bay, they saw nearly 500 western grebes.
That's a lot.
And that is a lot for a bird that we have has been considered to be in steep decline in recent years. So those are both interesting things.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, Alex Bradley reported seeing more than 50 bald eagles feasting on salmon carcasses south along Highway 101 at the estuary across from the Brennan Senior Center. Jeff Haverson also sent us an amazing photo of a bald eagle feeding in a different manner. He describes watching the eagle fly out to where some gulls gathered in an excited group feeding on a dense school of fish, and the eagle made a single pass, dropped its feet into the water, and the photo shows it hovering above the water with both of its feet clutching several herring in each foot. It's a remarkable photo.
Jeff also describes seeing and hearing a large mixed flock of red-winged blackbirds, Brewer's blackbirds, and European starlings feeding on the ground in a local pasture. From a nearby tree, one of the starlings started to call like a killdeer, followed by the characteristic quick three beers, breeding season call of an olive-sided flycatcher, most of which are long gone in South America right now. These are the dangers of birding strictly by ear. One can sometimes forget what excellent mimics starlings and some of the jay family can be.
They're just remarkable. Yeah, they really make you laugh. Jeff also sent us some lovely photos of some fresh-looking gumweed flowers, which look rather like garden-variety sunflowers, still blooming at Point Hudson. along with some willows budding at the Kaitai Lagoon, with furry catkins exposed. I've also been noticing fresh green leaf buds forming on the red flowering currants and red elderberry shrubs in my woods. Have you been noticing any plants trying to get a head start on spring, Fred?
Well, two comments. Once again, we've learned that plants do what they will do, irrespective of our expectations. Since we've had relatively cool weather, they came early. It doesn't make sense, but here they are. As far as the gumweed, it blooms all year round. That's what a lot of our non-natives do, but we still think it's a nice native plant.
Huh. Well, maybe we'll discover otherwise down the road, huh? And lastly, some very exciting news. The 8th baby orca of the year was confirmed last week, bringing the total of our resident orcas up to 84 individuals. It is another addition to J-POD. And 1977 is the only previous year in the last 40 years that has seen as many young born into this community of whales, with 9 young produced in 1977. It is very fitting that this should be so, as just last week, producer Nan Evans' program was titled Orca Baby Boom of 2015, in which she interviewed long-term researcher Ken Balcom of the Center for Whale Research in Friday Harbor. The new youngster was being photo-documented at just about the same time as the show was being broadcast. It was a fascinating interview, and if you missed it, you can still hear it by going to kptz.org and clicking on the podcast option. When I first started talking about doing the show with Fred, I had an idea to give a general overview of the plants of the holiday season, the firs, the holly, the mistletoe, etc. But Fred soon convinced me that parasitic plants, of which mistletoe is only one of many species in our area, are way too interesting to share the stage with other plants. So we thought to title the show The Parasites of the Holiday Season, but then worried that this might offend rather than amuse. So we're now calling this show The Parasitic Plants of the Olympic Peninsula. So mistletoe are parasites, right, Fred?
That's correct. But I must clarify that, with like many things in biology, the answer is yes and no. They are parasitic when they're adults, you might say. But when they first germinate, they are photosynthetic. They produce their own food. In order to produce enough food to penetrate the host and then become parasitic.
But before we get any further into this fascinating biology, I suppose we should start by reviewing a bit about the mythology of it. I mean, how did we ever develop a tradition of kissing under the mistletoe at the holidays? The tradition came from Europe, right, where they have mistletoe also.
Yes, the species in Europe has little round oval leaves, unlike ours, which usually don't have any leaves. And yes, it's a Druid myth that then became more associated with Norwegian countries. But other than that, I don't know too much about it, except that they say if you ignore the mistletoe, if a lady ignores the mistletoe, it is bad luck. Oh. And we mean by that she does not want to be kissed.
So, ladies beware. How many species do we have here on the Olympic Peninsula?
We have, of these parasites, we are now talking about these branch parasites. They grow on the branches of trees up high. On the Olympic Peninsula, we have one that's been recorded. But in Washington, we have 4, and in North America, we have over 40. So there may be more here, they simply haven't been reported. And that one grows on hemlock, on our western hemlock trees.
So back to their basic biology, they actually start out photosynthesizing as seedlings,
yes.
Right? And
yes.
Then as they grow, they tap into...
They penetrate the branches. Now we're talking branch parasites here. They penetrate the branches, and then they form a little ball on the end of their root, a little round ball to increase the surface area so that they have more surface area to take up nutrients from the tree. Remember, they have to get all their organic nutrients, all their water, and all their inorganic nutrients from that source. And so as adults, about 99% of their nutrition will come from that tree. And that particular one, the hemlock, apparently grows only on hemlock trees. So that's a rather close-knit relationship.
And some of the other species in Washington parasitize a variety of
different species. There's a one species on Douglas fir that's only on Douglas fir. There's another species that's only on ponderosa pine. And there's other species that will use several plants as a host.
So how do they broadcast seed?
Okay, one of the ways they do it, of course, is they do produce a little berry that birds eat. And the birds, they can either poop that seed out, or if they get that seed in their beak, they can. It's real sticky, so they try to wipe it off, and they wipe off the seed onto a branch. And other ones produce so much heat when they metabolize that the berry actually explodes. And the seed is broadcast up to 50 feet from its source, which is an amazing distance.
Wow, that is amazing.
And it sticks.
It gets hot because usually they're high up in the canopy. And that's another reason why people don't realize that we have as much mistletoe as we have, because it's usually up high in the canopy,
yes, and,
right?
Of course, the one we have in the Olympic Peninsula, it's fairly common because we see it routinely one or two or three times a year in Fort Townsend State Park after a storm. When the branches are down on the trails, we'll find it growing on the branch of Western Hemlock.
And it looks like...
It looks like several little brownish yellow twigs growing on top of the branch. It will not be out where all the needles are. It'll be right on a kind of a bare branch. It'll be obvious when you see it, yeah.
As an aside, one of the best places to look for photos of this and many other plants is the Burke Museum,
yes.
Right? The herbarium.
Yeah, it's the easiest thing to do is just enter a Burke herbarium, Burke Museum herbarium, and it'll take you right there. And then they'll have a special place to click on that has called the photo image gallery or something, and there'll be thousands of pictures of plants on there.
Oh, that's a great resource. So one thing that's confusing in trying to identify the mistletoes, a lot of times people think of any kind of aberrant growth on a tree as being a mistletoe, but you were telling me that that's not true, that it's actually a rust, right?
That's true. Typically, if you see one of these branch parasites, you'll know it. It looks like several twigs growing out of a branch, whereas what they call witch's broom, often you look off in the forest and see this mass of small twigs. This is not a parasite usually. This is actually the tree itself, which a rust, another name for a small fungus, has penetrated the growing cells of the tree and caused them to essentially become cancerous. They become cancerous in the sense that it causes the tree to rapidly grow all this adventitious or aberrant type growth, which then forms a mass of little that look like twigs. They are twigs. They are parts of the tree, though. They're not a parasite. And that's what we refer to as witch's broom often.
And that can occur on a variety of
many different
species.
Kinds, even shrub like evergreen huckleberry. There's a lot of it on evergreen huckleberry. And you see it on alder. You can see it on maple. You can see it on different trees. Yeah.
That clears it up.
It's like a cancerous growth, actually. It does nothing good for the tree.
And that's where those photos that the Burke herbarium has will help us in identifying and seeing the difference between a mistletoe and the expression of rust on
a
tree.
You won't see any witch's brooms there because that's not it's an aberrant plant growth, but you'll see the parasitic pictures of them.
Uh-huh, that's great. But I know that your true love is for the plants known as root parasites. Do you want to introduce them to us?
Well, the root parasites, the most common ones that actually grow on roots, are the ones that we call broom rapes. They're called broom rapes because the first one discovered in England was actually parasitic on the roots of Scots broom. So we plan on importing a lot of that to get rid of Scots broom, which is tongue-in-cheek, of course. But so that generally they've been called broom rapes. But we have several species around here that grow on the roots of other plants. For example, at Fort Townsend State Park, we have a plant called Hooker's ground cone that looks like a pine cone that's creamish yellow colored. It grows on salal and other plants in the heath family. It actually penetrates the roots and it's completely colorless. There is no green color to it at all. It relies entirely on penetrating the roots of another plant, forming little balls and sucking out its nutrients.
Well, when I first learned about these plants years ago, they were called saprophytes. Saprophyte meaning an organism that lives on dead or decaying organic material, right? Why aren't they called this anymore?
Because they were called that because it looked like that was what they must be doing, but we've now learned that they actually are penetrating the roots of other species. The assumption was with all that organic material, all they had to do was sit there and use it, but it's not that simple. Remember, when you have a plant growing in the root of another plant, it is actually taking up dissolved organic materials. That's not quite like a plant trying to take up an undissolvable piece of organic material laying in a forest. So what they do is they actually get dissolved organic materials from other plants through their haustoria. It just seemed obvious they must be just using the organic material until we look deeper.
As so many things in science, right. When you dig deeper, it's way more complex than we realize. Right. So they're also associated with a fungus, right?
We have the branch parasites, the root parasites, and then the third and most interesting and most complex relationships are those plants such as the coral roots, which are orchids, the wintergreens, and several other species, Indian pipe and pine sap, and these colorless plants you see in the dark forest, they are actually living by parasitizing a fungus that's in the soil. They get their nutrition from a fungus. And, of course, the fungus isn't photosynthetic either, so it is getting its nutrition from the tree roots that it is associated with. So the way they found this out, they marked carbon. They marked carbon molecules, and they put a bag over the leaves of the needles of a tree. They inserted the carbon into this bag. The tree photosynthesized, took up this marked carbon, and then they found it in the fungus, and then they found it in the parasitic flowering plant. So they could see that the organic material was moving from the tree to the fungus to the flowering plant, and that's how they live.
Wow, that is just...
And there are multiple species.
So amazing. I mean, it's just such an elegant system.
And I hate to keep repeating myself, but Fort Townsend State Park is kind of an epicenter for these species because it's so dark. The canopy's closed. It's very dark.
Well, and speaking about light, tell us about how it's connected. Tell us about the pink flowering pyrola and how it can be both.
The wintergreen, the one we called the pink pyrola. If you go into the park where it's dark, you can find this plant growing with beautiful flowers, but no leaves, and it's completely parasitic on a fungus. And if you go out to the edge of the park, on the access road to the park, where there's light, you'll find it has beautiful dark green leaves and the same exact flowers. It's the same species. It's just where there's light, it grows leaves and lives on its own. I mean, where it's dark, it has no leaves. So this is a rather fantastic sort of adaptation.
I love that you can see it.
And it shows the flexibility of plants. They can get by. They can't move, but they seem to find a way to get by wherever they are.
Yeah. Well, these particular plants have amazing adaptations, right?
It's one of the most interesting things. And also, the other interesting thing about it, this is not such a stretch when you think about it. These plants, like the wintergreens and the ones I talked earlier about, the broom rapes, are closely related to plants that we think of as beautiful wildflowers, like the Indian paintbrush that we see meadows of in the Olympics. We see it on the banks at Fort Worden State Park. And those plants, while they have beautiful flowers and green leaves, they are also partially parasitic. So if times get tough, they can also steal their nutrition. So it's interesting that these plant families have so many different ways of getting by, you might say.
Well, and we are particularly fortunate, as you say, at Old Fort Townsend to have so many different species there. I mean, they're really beautiful, these root parasites.
And the time to go is June, May. They start in May, and they'll run to the middle of June. And the Native Plant Society almost every year leads a hike out there to take a look at some of these, if anybody's interested.
I'm sure that they will be. And so something that a lot of our listeners don't realize is that, one, that orchids are parasites, and that 90% of the plants in the forest have these mycorrhizal relationships, right?
That's right. We feel that probably 90%, at least, of all the trees and shrubs are dependent on an integral relationship between the roots and a fungus called a mycorrhizal fungus. And the fungus helps provide water to the plants as well as nutrients, and the tree or shrub provides all the nutrition to the fungus. So for these parasitic plants like the orchid, the orchids and some of these other species tap into that same fungus, that is providing nutrients and water to the tree, and obtain their organic nutrition from that fungus. In other words, the tree photosynthesizes. The products of that photosynthesis are used by the fungus. In exchange, it gives back water and nutrients, but also those products are used by the parasitic orchid. And so you have a three-way connection between the orchid and other parasitic plants like this, the orchid, the fungus, and the tree, all of which are interdependent on each other.
That is just such an elegant and complex system. I mean, it makes me happy to understand a little bit about how complex it is. But the other part of that is that we need to understand that when we disturb that, none of it works right anymore.
If any one of these, the fungus or the parasitic flowering plant, become disconnected from the other, they need to establish a new connection or they will die. They're just totally interdependent.
Good for us to contemplate at this holiday season and starting on a new year. So thank you so much for coming to speak to us about this. We have a bunch of interesting upcoming natural history events to tell you about.
Please join the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society and the Jamestown Sklallam Tribe at the grand opening of the new railroad bridge on Wednesday, December 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Light refreshments will follow at the Dungeness River Audubon Center after the short program and ceremony. Go to Olympic Peninsula Audubon, that's one word, olympicpeninsulaaudubon.org for more details.
The Jefferson Land Trust invites you to share cider and cookies with them on New Year's Eve to celebrate the completion of two conservation projects before the new year. Come hear more about them at their office at 1033 Lawrence Street, Port Townsend, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
On New Year's Day, the Admiralty Audubon Society will be starting the new year off right by heading out to Irondale Bay to look for birds. Join them starting at 10 a.m. and go to admiraltyaudubon.org for more details.
And lastly, you can join our local chapter of the Washington Native Plant Society on their traditional New Year's Day teddy bear walk. And I think that I'll let Fred tell you about this one, as I think that you and Anne started this great tradition, right, Fred?
Yes, this will be our 12th year in the Port Townsend area, although we did this for another 8 years before we came here. But our 12th year, we go different places close by town just to get a nice walk on New Year's Day. We call it a socio-botanical walk. So you're welcome to talk and walk. And I'll tell you the story of the teddy bear and why it's called that if you do show up.
Oh, well, there's a tease for you. And here's our mystery sound again. It's an ancient murrelet, and I chose it because of an extraordinary sighting that Diane Mulholland posted on the Admiralty Audubon website last week. Ancient murrelets are small, chunky seabirds, cousins to the better-known marbled murrelets, which we also get in our area. Ancient murrelets are even more uncommon in our area than marbled murrelets are, however, and Diane recorded more than 60 ancient murrelets flying in and out of Oak Bay last week, diving and feeding. She continues on to say that they were the first ancient murrelets that she has seen in Oak Bay in 14 years. We will hope to hear more about what is behind this and if the birds have remained in the area. Our thanks to Cornell University's great CD collection, Bird Songs of the Pacific Northwest, for the recording. And that's it for KPTC's Nature Now for the third week of December. Thanks very much for joining me, Fred. And thanks to all of you for listening. Remember, if you missed any of our program or want to listen again, this program will be rebroadcast at 5 p.m. on Thursday, 11:30 on Saturday, and available as a podcast in a week or so at kptz.org. We at Nature Now would like to wish you a very happy holiday season, a happy Hanukkah, happy solstice, happy Christmas, happy New Year, and as always, very happy trails.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Closing music is With You Under the Mistletoe, performed by the Bashling Friends.
I don't want to miss out the holiday, but I can't stop staring at your face. I shouldn't be playing in the winter snow, but I'ma be under the mistletoe.
With you, shawty, with you.
Everyone's gathering around the fire. Chestnuts roasting like a hot July. Shouldn't be chilling with my folks, I know. But I'ma be under the mistletoe. Word on the street, sun is coming at night. Reindeer flying to the sky so high. I should be making a list, I know. I'ma be under the mistletoe.
You, shout it with you. Shout it with you, you, under the mistletoe.
Yeah, now, yeah, yeah.
You, shout it with you, with you, oh. Shout it with you, with you, under the mistletoe.
Hey, love, the wise men follow the stars,
the, wise follow
the
star.
Way I follow my heart.
Yeah.
And it led me to a miracle.
Hey, love.
Don't you bite me nothing.
Don't you bite me nothing.
Cause I am feeling.